Be patient, therefore, beloved, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth, being patient with it until it receives the early and late rains. You also must be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. We are in the midst of a series about being missionaries in the suburbs, suburban missionaries. And we are suburban missionaries. I don't know if you knew that or not, but now you know. We are called to be in this place, to be ambassadors for Christ in this place, to be a demonstration plot of the kingdom in this space. And so we must understand the values of our culture that we live in, the places where that point to Christ and point to the kingdom, and places and values that would point, would be like an anti-kingdom. And the good news is that we're not sent out empty-handed into this mission field. It's the Spirit who nourishes us like a plant, or like a field, and is desires to bear fruit through us. So as LOV bears kingdom fruit, you know, we've talked about love and joy and peace, and today we'll talk about patience. We together are becoming a garden, an oasis that welcomes others who are hungry and thirsty for the kind of life only found in Christ. And so I say, I pray the Lord be with you. I thought it was kind of appropriate that we're doing patience, and this is the week when the Cubs made it into the playoffs, right? So if anybody knows about patience, it's Cubs fans, right? So, but even as a Cubs fan, I feel overwhelmed, inadequate. When you're preparing to preach a sermon on patience, you really notice how many times you are impatient. And you're like, oh, and I'm preaching on this? Especially with a 3-year-old. But I want to tell a story that I've told before as a way to enter into this experience. It's been a while, but there was this apartment that I used to live in. And the apartment came with a garage space included in it. It was a covered garage space, and it was like a part of a row of garages in the back of the apartment. And I had spot number 3. That was on the lease. My garage spot was number 3. So you can imagine I was surprised when I returned home from work one day, and there was a car parked in my spot, in spot number 3. And I thought, you know, and I had been parking there for like a week and no problems, but, you know, it's like, it's kind of the season when everyone was moving in. It was on a college campus, so I thought, well, this person just, you know, they made a mistake. I'll just let it go. I'm sure that it'll get sorted out. Okay, so then the next day I come home, and this Jeep is parked in my spot again. And so this time I'm like, okay, this is getting a little bit annoying. So I decided to write a note, you know, and put it on the windshield, like, hey, this was my spot. Please don't park here anymore. And then also, I think I put in a call to the landlord, just said, hey, I'm just confused because this person, what should I do? This person keeps parking in my spot. So while I was waiting for that to get sorted out, I had to park on the street. And when I went out to get my car the next morning, there was like a police car and a tow truck. They were towing all these cars. It was like everyone had parked in the spot. It was kind of one of those things where it was like one person parked there illegally, and then everyone else thought that it was an okay place to park. So they were about to tow like 10 cars away, including my own. So I quickly, you know, got out of there before they towed it. But I was like, really, at this point, I was like, this is really starting to mess with me that this person keeps parking in my spot. I mean, I almost got towed, and this person's just got to get out. I mean, this has got to end. So when I got home later that day and the Jeep was still in my spot number three, I was just ready to go to war, you know. So I called the tow truck company. I just said, like, hey, there's a person parking my spot. I have my lease here. I'll show you. Like, come and tow it. So the tow truck guy came out, and he looked at the Jeep, and he said, well, this Jeep has four-wheel drive, so I can't tow it. If I try to tow it, it would just rip out the transmission or something like that. I don't really remember, but something bad that the tow truck driver was not willing to do, even though he was also convinced that, you know, this person was parked in my spot. So at this point, I'm really angry because I'm like, this person is doing something really wrong and there's no consequences. I mean, I was like, just rip out the transmission. I mean, do what you need to do. Like, that's how they're going to learn. wasn't one of my finer, most patient moments, but so the tow truck driver said, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. But what I would suggest is you buy a padlock. And, you know, get one of those, like, little latches. And then when the Jeep leaves, close the garage door and then just lock it with a padlock. So I didn't have a padlock. I didn't have and I was just so mad. The tow truck driver left, and I was just like, you know, I'm just, I didn't. So I said, I couldn't find my lock. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to, okay, so. This is going to make me look really bad. I'm going to shut the garage door, and I'm going to take a couple boards, and I'm going to nail the boards. I'm going to basically nail this guy's Jeep in, right? That was my plan. Because at this point, I'm in full-on, like, vigilante mode, you know? So that's sort of a glimpse into my heart. And I can't, and I mean, I'm well along on this plan. Like, I've got the boards, and all I need is a hammer. And I just saw my hammer. I'm like, I know it's around, and I cannot find it. And I'm just frantically, like, looking through my house for a hammer so that I can nail a garage door shut to trap a Jeep in there that's not supposed to be in there so that they'll learn their lesson. And at one point, I just realized, like, I start having this, like, this moment of clarity about what I was doing. And just since God was saying, like, you're not going to find your hammer. And it was God's grace and compassion that I could not find it. And I knew that I would find it as soon as I, you know, the next day, once I'd given up on this plan. Well, it turns out that this was this person's spot. After all, there was a mix-up. There was eight garage spots. There was 1, 2, 3, 4 on one side and 5, 6, 7, 8 on the other side. And at one point, the two buildings had become owned by two different companies. And so I was actually number 7, but because this company only owned those 4 garage spots, they on the lease, they had numbered it 3. So very confusing. Turns out I was wrong. And once I had discovered that, I was on a lunch break, and I was parked in what I thought was my spot while the other guy was at work. I'm just like, I'm going to use this, you know, while I can. And as I pulled out to go back to work, I clipped the side mirror off as like the last time I'm leaving this spot, this place of great contention. I end up, you know, clipping my mirror off. So, awful. But maybe you can relate to certain situations where you're in a situation where you're in a place and this is not the way it's supposed to be, right? It's not the way it's supposed to be. And we just can't take it anymore. We have to do something. It's not the way it's supposed to be. I should have had that promotion instead of that other guy. Right? I shouldn't have to work this late, but here I am in the office again, and it's when everyone else has already gone home. I was thinking this week, this is the worst possible week to get hand, foot, mouth disease. Right? Some people in our community are experiencing that. I want more time for blank, but instead I have to do this. I would be so much more productive if this wasn't here. If they really cared about me, they would do this. It's not fair that fill in the blank. I thought I would be further advanced, further along in my career at this point. Nobody said it was going to be this hard. Where have we felt entitled to something? And maybe legitimately so. Something, there was a wrong that needs to be righted. We have a right to something that's being denied us. Maybe you have some examples. And in these places, how do we respond? With patience? Or do we try to make it right in our own power? By force? By fighting? By withdrawing? Bitterness? Quitting? So patience is this posture where we choose not to take justice into our own hands, but rather we take our troubles and we place our entire life, past, present, and future, into God's care. Patience is not taking justice into our own hands. It's not taking control of the situation and trying to resolve it in our own time frame. But it's placing it into the hands of God, for God to resolve in God's time. And the good news that we proclaim this morning, that we declare, is that we are a people that can stick it out, because God is the God who will sort it out. We are a people who can stick it out because God is going to sort it out. In our text this morning from James, we have a community where poor Christians, James is addressing poor Christians who are not being paid their wages. And so you have this sense where there's this community of people who are poor, and then you have these people who are likely not a part of the Christian community, but that are like the rich landowners and merchants who these people work for, but they're not getting paid their wages from. Just to kind of back up from what was read this morning, 5:4, we're in James chapter 5, starting in verse 4, James says, and he's speaking to the rich landowners. Listen, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, they cry out. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous one who does not resist you. And it's only after that that then he switches and he addresses this Christian community. And he says, the first thing he says is, be patient, brothers and sisters, beloved. Be patient. They're part of a situation where they are being deliberately condemned and murdered. And it's not clear. Some commentators think that there's actual murder that's happening in this kind of class warfare. And there's some commentators that believe that it's the economic injustice. It's pushing these people who are already on the margins further off the edge into a place where their health, their very life is at risk of being lost. Malnourished, can't feed, can't feed their families, starving. And also in this time frame, we also have to remember that this is a situation where the margins are, the margins for life and death are already pretty thin. So it's not hard to imagine that these practices would put people's lives in danger. And it's in this situation where people are dying. And Paul says, be patient. Be patient. And that's, I got to say, like a little hard to hear. It sounds like, to my ears, that Paul is saying, just resign yourselves to this fate. You know? Like, look, just take it. You know, and there just seems to be something. So, there's something in me that bristles with that. And I'm sure there was something in them that bristled as well. Some people think that there was an actual temptation that let's band together and let's fight. Let's fight back against these landowners. Let's take control of the situation so that we're not, so our sons and daughters aren't dying. And we would probably be pretty sympathetic to that in our world. And yet James says, no, that is not an option in Christ. Now, it's not a passive patience. It's not a do-nothing patience. Because earlier, Paul says, God has heard your cries. So patience doesn't mean not speaking up, not crying out, not protesting, not lamenting the situation. But it's not taking justice into our own hands. It's not saying, I'm going to make this right in my time, in my way. And there's a reason why Paul, or why James says, be patient. Have I been saying Paul?
Yes, please,
Paul. It happened when I was preparing to. I just kept saying, Paul, James. The reason why they can be patient is because, James says, God is coming. It's not because, like, just take it, but it's because God is coming. God is coming to make this right. And if you take this into your own hands, then you'll lose out on your vindication. But if you maintain your integrity, and if you wait, then God will come and vindicate you. And those who are oppressing you will be judged. God will make the wrong right. But we have to be patient. James is writing to a community that has legitimate reason to be angry. Legitimate reason to complain. Legitimate reason to be afraid. And he's saying, violence and taking control is not an option. I was thinking about, while we may not face anywhere near that threat in our world, in our context, sadly, many in this world this morning do face that reality. You know, we're going to be meeting after church to talk more about the hosting refugees. And as you read this text from the eyes of a refugee, the injustice, the loss of home, the loss of place, the loss of family members, the loss of health. And to be in these refugee camps, just a holding place. You're not You're not in your past. You're not in your future. You're stuck. And yet the call as a Christian, when we're faced with these situations, is to be patient, is to wait. It doesn't mean to not seek a better way. You know, you're thinking about these refugees who are crossing borders and who are being, violence is being done to them. And the call is to be patient. I sit in tension with that. I do. Because I am not in that place. But now, I think, but through seeing it through their eyes, we get at the radical nature of patience. The radical call. The patience comes about when there is a willingness to be wronged, to absorb evil without retaliating. Patience yields control over outcomes and evaluations. Patience yields control over outcomes and evaluations. So there's several places where I feel like that we might encounter this in our own community. One of those is in the area of justice work and in ministry. So patience is not passively accepting the reality as it is, but it's in a world that trains us to expect comfort, will we willingly enter into solidarity with the poor, with the suffering, with the hurting? And that calls for patient sacrifice of our time and our resources, and a willingness to be mistreated, to be misunderstood, and to labor without seeing much progress. And here James gives the example of the prophets. He says, remember the prophets, examples of patience and suffering. And now they're considered blessed. And he just sort of invokes it for a little bit. And he doesn't give specific prophets' names, but if you know the story, you know, there are many examples of prophets who were misunderstood for following God's call in their life, who were mistreated, who were abused, who were certainly not appreciated, and many were martyred. And yet now we consider them blessed. And what a reversal that is over the ways that our culture values productivity and results, right? So here God is giving us a different view of things, a longer view of things, that God may call us to ministry, to work, that we won't see any fruit from in our lifetime. And yet that could be exactly what being faithful looks like. But that takes patience. That takes patience. Having a long view, to be able to suffer for a long time without seeing any progress. Another example is, again, it's in productivity. Thinking about that we live under the pressure of needing to do more and more in less time. We live under the pressure of having to do it all and do it well. I think especially for millennials or younger generations, we increasingly expect to be able to do what we love. You know, we even hear that expression, do what you love, right? And while that's not a bad aspiration, generations that have preceded us have known that life happens and it's not always a possibility. And even so here James gives the example of Job. Job was doing pretty well, and then life happened. This is sort of a shorthand way of saying it, right? and he complained. You know, he didn't take it very passively at all. And yet, he didn't curse God. You know, he didn't make promises when he was under that pressure that he couldn't keep. He didn't walk away. He didn't quit. He wasn't perfect, but he hung in there. He stuck it out. And James says, and look and see what God's purposes, what the finish of that story was, that God restored him. God vindicated Job and restored him. We don't talk enough about the virtue of going to a job and patiently working hard day after day to keep a roof over your head and to put bread on your table, and how good that is. That's holy work. We don't talk enough about patiently working hard day after day, making meals and doing laundry and surrendering to another imagined game that must be repeated over and over again. Without pay or recognition, hidden away from the world. And when someone asks you what you did today and you are not sure what to say, you don't know what was really accomplished, because what was accomplished cannot be measured in an 8-hour day. And this too is holy work. Holy work. And the world may see that. See what you're doing as wasting time. The lie that our culture says that we were made to accomplish more than this. But this is holy work. We are people who stick it out because God is going to sort it out. And we let God sort out the value of our work. Not others, not even ourselves. And I'm not saying never change or never try to better your life, but in the meantime, where you are at now, in the work that you have for today and for tomorrow, entrust it to God. Entrust your work to God. Let God sort out the value of your work. Work as if working for the Lord. And in other words, that is letting God speak to you about the value of the work that you're doing. How much you get paid for it has very little correlation to the value that God places on it. And I also think about this area of conflict. Patience is needed when we're in conflict with one another. We have to slow down. That's one of the most frustrating things when we have conflict with people. We have to go and slow down and like talk to them. And we have to listen, and real listening. And real listening is a kind of yielding over control about what happened and about who this person is and who you are. It's allowing other person's words to change us and to correct us where we have thought wrongly and to convict us where we've done harm. And then patience calls for forgiveness. And when we forgive, we are absorbing evil without retaliating. And we can do this because God is so patient with us, right? So forgiving. So compassionate and merciful, time and time again. So how much more can we patiently forgive others? And as we move towards being a people of patience, we break the cycle of vengeance and we open up the possibility for healing and for peace. I always have to say a disclaimer. This is not a... there are situations where we need to get out of it. If there's abuse, God is not calling you to stick it out. That is not a time when patience is called for. It's not a time for retaliation either. But it's a call for a different response. Get help, right? I always have to make that disclaimer. So, wherever you are at today, God sees you. Whatever it is that you're suffering today, God hears your cries. And God will keep his promises concerning you. And he will not fail. But God does not operate with the same sense of time that we do. This is the God who grows orchards and forests, and he begins with small seeds that grow over decades and hundreds of years. This is the God who creates great canyons over a mile deep, and he begins with a slow trickle of water over thousands of years. This is the God who created the universe and then 8 billion years later creates the earth. Our story is filled with people also uncomfortably waiting on God. We have the Israelites in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. This is the God who led Israel around a desert for 40 years. This is the God who told the exiles in Babylon to settle down because they wouldn't be returning for another 70 years. This is the God who, after the words of Malachi, waits 400 years before the ministry of John the Baptist. This is the Jesus who lived for 30 years before beginning his public ministry. And this is the same Jesus who came to a full stop on the cross. This is the same Jesus who lay in a tomb, not one day, not 2 days, 3 days. This is the same Jesus who ascended to heaven and who we still wait for his return 2,000 years later. Why does God work so slowly? I don't know. But perhaps it's because the work that God does cannot be done in a hurry. Is it possible that we often do not see what God is doing in our world because it simply does not fit into our relatively short time frame? Can we have a longer imagination for God to work? Is it possible that we miss God's activity in our lives and in our world because it doesn't match our expectations for efficiency? We have these expectations of spiritual growth that we just go, it's like we start here and then we go here, and this is just a straight line. But in reality, the experience of it is like this, right? And we're like, wait a second. I was over here, now I'm here. How is this progress? Why are you so inefficient, God? The slow and inefficient work of God. God is patient. Some practices, some trellises, you know, we've talked about the fruit. It needs support. Some trellises that can help us to grow in this, to cultivate this fruit of patience. Sabbath. Sabbath helps us to slow down. It strips away the illusion that we are in control and that we are the ones that make things happen. Sabbath reminds us that we have all the time that we need, and that time is a gift to be received and to cherished and shared, not a commodity to be mastered and hoarded. Sabbath teaches us to love the day that we're in. Another practice is sleep. Sleep is a kind of surrender. Surrendering our control. There's things that I didn't get done today, and it's okay. I can go to sleep. So let's pray. Let's respond. God is speaking to us. If this is helpful for you as a response to God, Lord, in the midst of blank, I'm entrusting the outcome to you, Lord, in your mercy. If there's another response that's more helpful, go with that. Let's enter into a time of prayer.